views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, Random Reptoid, or Chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us. Share your story, share your experience. Because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. My name is Greg Bakken, and thank you very much for joining me tonight. I am also very happy to be able to say that Mr. Adam is in studio with us tonight. Adam, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well, sir. It's a good night to be talking here on Ghost Box Radio. Cannot wait for tonight's topic and author.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great night. And Adam, like I think I might have mentioned before, please feel free to jump in if you have any questions tonight or whatever, because I think we're going to have a great program, and I'm really excited. We've been talking with our guest tonight for a few months now to try to bring her on and whatnot. And knowing that we were going to go to weeknights, I thought, you know, why don't we just wait until we're going to be on a better time than 4 p.m. on a Sunday, and really be able to celebrate, you know, some of this work that's being done. And so tonight we are talking with Anna Maria Monolo, who is an author. She had just come out in April with her latest book, The Night Visitants, A Ufologist, An Experiencer, and The Undefinable. And we are just really thrilled to be able to have her on tonight. We're going to talk about this book. We're going to maybe touch on some of the other ones, but we really want to focus on this book tonight because it was her and also Tom Conwell, which she's going to talk about that here in a second as well. And Anna Maria, welcome to Ghost Box Radio.
Thank you, Greg. Pleasure to be here.
Well, the pleasure is all ours. And I'd like to invite all of our listeners to join into the conversation, to do so, to ask a question to Anna Maria about the book or anything else that comes to mind when we have our conversation. You can call in tonight, 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. We are also, we're streaming to a bunch of Facebook pages tonight as well. We are on AM 950 Radio Facebook page, Things Network, and of course, Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken. If you haven't done so already, please go to Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken. Like the page. We post a lot of stuff there all the time, not just about the radio show, but all sorts of other things. So please go over there and check it out if you can. We'd greatly appreciate it. You know, Anna Maria, why don't we just start with what is this book? What is it about, please?
Yeah, this is a very interesting book in terms of me as a writer doing the research part of this and interviewing the two people. I want to preface by thanking Tom Conwell, who's my co-author and also the publisher of this particular book. He provided me with a very riveting account, not just of his own lifetime, but also a woman's. And I will tell you how this began with me. Tom, basically, I met because of a couple of ufology groups on social media, Facebook in particular. And it's been probably about 4 or 5 years that I've known him off and on through that medium. And one of the conversations that we used to have, we actually did during the pandemic because everything was shut down. So as some people would reach out by phone or by messenger, Tom and I did that. We actually started with breathing exercises, meditation, and things of that nature. Oh, wow. Something that was kind of like off the, you know, off topic. But as time went on, he started collecting information. He was very interested with abductees. That is people who have had what you would call CE4, or close encounter of the fourth kind, where they were actually taken. He was into the ufological literature, but he was also himself at some point an investigator. And in this particular case, what he decided to do was reach out to some of his followers on Facebook. He sent out a questionnaire. It was an email questionnaire, but there was also a paper version. They were given an option to print them out. And in the process, he got 50 questionnaires. Mm-hmm. Out of the 50, he weeded through them and ended up with five that he thought were pretty genuine. And out of the five, there was one particular woman. And her answers were actually short, but she had a phone number. So he contacted her. And so this book is about her and her experiences, but it's also about Tom's experiences. And what I did was I interwove the two stories, and you will see what happens in nature. You will see people who have very different lives, but also on opposite poles, where you have one that's all positive experience and the other one being really terrifying, bizarre experiences that can't be explained.
Wow. So, and so they're in the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is it, and I'm sorry, is it just the two of them in the book, or is it more than them?
Well, it centers around the experiences of Tom in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I introduced Tom early in the book, and I basically write in first person. I get to know the person, which is my style of writing. I get to know them individually by talking to them on the phone for a period of time, trying to get the information from them, but also trying to get a flavor of how they react to the experience that they're having. And then I create that persona on there, writing in first person. So this comes out as a memoir of Tom. But then as he moves on and starts collecting information about these abductees, I then do the backstory on this particular abductee, an experiencer. And for the purposes of the book, I call her Shailene. I did not use her name. I did not have the permission to use her name or her location. So it also has her story in there and the people, of course, that they affected, the people that were around them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's almost like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like that you kind of start in one way and you kind of are passing it off, so to speak, the narrative to the people one after another, so to speak.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's nonfiction, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, what I do that's distinctively different from what you might call a documentary is that what mm-hmm. I just don't share the data. I actually create a story. And these stories are based on what they're telling me through interviews. Because I'm a trained interviewer, for lack of a better word, I tend to eke out all the information I need that way, either by phone or in person. The interviews I did with Tom and this woman, Shailene, were primarily by phone. And what I did was piece together all their experiences in a coherent whole so that when people read them, they realize that's why that happened. That's because of this. So there's mm-hmm. always what I feel is a catalyst for an event. And you'll see that there's definite catalyst for these strange events that happened to both of them.
Wow. So you're kind of what we'd call synthesizing then the data, what you're getting, and
exactly.
creating something out of it. And but as you're saying, it's a story, but everything in that story has happened. It's all
yes,
true.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. That's,
so
that's
it's all in
cool.
chronological. Yeah. It's in chronological order. And I think one of the things that really surprised me about this as I was writing it is how there was such a difference in the way Tom interacted with the entities. The type of entities that he was encountering were markedly positive. He refers to them as Indian guides, not to give too much away, but they definitely were much more benevolent. On the other hand, as I introduced Shailene, and this is something that happened early in her childhood, she was about 6 years old when these things happened. It happened in a very different way, Greg, and I think you kind of alluded to that when you were introducing the topic. Mm-hmm. Most ufologists would say, we're talking about someone who's been abducted. So here are the aliens, and they're usually ones that look either insectoid or humanoid in some way, or they have almond-shaped eyes and, you know, they appear to be your proverbial grays. In this particular case, they don't appear that way. And that's why I call it undefinable. Their interaction with her is incredibly destructive. They have destroyed pretty much every segment of her life, infiltrated her most private moments, and even have, you know, destroyed her marriage. So in the very beginning, the introduction of just a simple object of murder was enough to catalyze this. And I don't know if you want me to explain that in particular. I certainly can do that. Jamie's father, her father came home from World War II. So when this all started, when this all began, it was like in the late 1940s. He was involved in the fall of Berlin. At the time, he was actually going through the rubble of, you know, the cities of Germany. And they were crossing the Rhine River. Geographically, the Rhine River was significant during the war, in the closing of the war. The Germans had already fallen. So what they were doing was going through buildings that were broken, you know, things that had already been bombed. And they were looking to pretty much get all kinds of antiques, whatever is left behind that could be precious. So within that rubble, he discovers a dying Nazi. And this is Shailene's father, who was part of a tank battalion. Obviously, he was very angry because the previous battalion he was in, everybody that was in there had been murdered. All he did was leave his tank for a few minutes. He came back. It was on fire. Actually, one of the gentlemen, I think it was the lieutenant, came out. He was on fire himself. So he was subsequently sent to another battalion. And in this particular new group, that's when they started driving through the streets of one of the major cities that had already fallen. He discovers a Nazi who was in the throes of death. He picks up a pistol, which is actually a Luger that was used by the Nazi, and shoots him in the head. Decides that he wants to bring home the Luger as a trophy. So he puts that away in his duffel bag, and it makes its way into the States. And he ends up, of all places, somewhere on the East Coast. And he brings it home to his family, along with other trophies. And a lot of people, you know, I know these days people like to collect haunted objects, where they be, you know, dolls or pictures or books or whatever they are. And it's a cautionary tale how this woman's life was destroyed by the simple act of someone, it seemed to be, something that was an object that killed thousands of people.
So that Luger was instrumental into what ended up completely affecting her life.
Yeah, that was the first thing that Shailene has thought of as being a catalyst. And I have to say that when I look through all the notes that I had, it certainly sounded logical to me. The next thing that happened was he kept the Luger away from the three children. Shailene was one of three, and she was the oldest. He squirreled it away in, of all places, right above the child's bed in a crawl space to keep it away from them. But on the other hand, it's up there, and you know, it's a very violent object to have taken home. All the negative energy that it had in there with it was in there. And within just a few nights of the father putting it away, things started to happen in the child's bedroom, in the hallway. It magnified to the point where even in her teenage years, there were a lot of uncanny things that were happening to her. And some of them were very terrifying. At some point, she saw something that was on the side of the road. It started affecting her husband, started affecting her relationships.
Wow. You know, and I'm going to do this a little bit earlier, Adam, if this is okay. I think what I'm going to do, because I think we're a good stopping point, and there's some other questions I want to ask and get into a different track. Why don't we take our first break? When we come back, there's so many questions that just came from what Anna had said, and I really want to be able to kind of dig into that more. So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Anna about her book, The Night Visitants, A Ufologist, An Experiencer, and the Undefinable. You're listening to Ghostbox Radio on AM 950. And, you know, we're still talking about that question of the week that we put out there on Monday. Do you believe aliens are actively working with the United States government? You know, as I've been saying every night this week, there isn't a right or wrong answer as far as I'm concerned. It's just your opinion, just like I have my own opinion. But I'm very curious to know what people think. And if you're able to just put a note into the comments, or you can send me an email, comment@ghostboxradio.com. Let me know what you think. I'd be very interested in knowing, because I've always wished that there was like some alien that's wearing like a colonel's uniform or something, like working in the government. I don't know. I just, it's a image that I've been seeing in my mind for some time. And I don't think that that's really happening or not. We are returning our conversation with Anna Maria Manolo. We're talking about The Night Visitants, A Ufologist, An Experiencer, and The Undefinable. It's a book that just was released in April of this year. And I see a couple people in our Facebook chat, and you can go to Ghostbox Radio with Greg Bakken on Facebook to join the chat if you want to stream it. But I've noticed a couple people on there who have already told me that they've gotten your book, Anna. You know, that they got your book. They're really excited about it. And I really think that this is something incredible. And where we left off in the last segment, Anna was talking about kind of the beginning for one of the people that was part of the survey, and takes it back to World War II and a Luger. So this Luger seems to be causing a lot of problems, and we're in paranormal territory, are we? Or where are we here with that?
Well, Greg, it's an interesting question that you post, because I post that myself to Mr. Conwell at the time when I was writing this book. Mm-hmm. What he posited to me was that this was an abductee, an experiencer that had a very, very difficult and harrowing life, courtesy of the visitations that she would get. He got very involved with the case, more so than the others, because she started contacting him on a regular basis. So when we started talking about getting this book together, I, of course, had to contact her directly to get the information. And Greg, as I talked to her, and I think I must have talked to her at least 15 or 18 times, a series of interviews to get, you know, the plot together, to get her narrative together, I had to pause. I had to sit back. I contacted Tom, and I said, Tom, I want to let you know that Shailene and I are in conversation, and something is resonating with me, being that I am an experiencer myself, more in the supernatural area. You know, we had Mothman visitations when I was a small child. Oh, wow. So the nature of this really hit me. It smells like an infestation, looks like an infestation, quacks like an infestation. Tom, what do we have here? It looks to me like it's an infestation. And I don't really think it's just simply a friendly ghost. Mm-hmm. It's something else. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Greg, when you're talking to someone who might have something attached to them, there's a very strong possibility that a lot of things, if you know what I mean, are listening.
Absolutely. That was my next question, actually. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I had that very palpable feeling that there were a lot of things in the room with us when I talked to her. I refrained from talking to her at night. I made sure when I talked to her, it was in the daytime, in the sunlight. Of course, I can't always take my laptop outside if it's raining. In one of the situations when I was writing, you know, I have a notebook that I use to refer to as I'm typing away and writing these scenes. I had a very uneasy feeling. It's quite difficult to explain, and you probably can understand what it is, but I had to stop writing the book for over a week.
It's almost intangible, but it's there, right? I mean, just that feeling and that it's like weight.
Yeah.
It's just like weight how I would. Yeah.
Things did not turn from what we would consider, what a paranormal team would consider as an infestation of a high degree until 2017, when Shailene started seeing things that were inside her cheek. It was crawling inside her cheek.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It looked like she had, to a ufologist, she looked like she had an implant.
Okay.
She also had something in her hand that was traveling.
Through her body?
At some point, yeah, through her body. And at some point that she had a child, a small child at the time. She remembered taking the child to the supermarket. First, she was going to go to the doctor, but she was so afraid because of the neighborhood she was in, and it was so conservative. She was very concerned how the doctor would react. She thought maybe she would be committed, something would happen so that the whole neighborhood would just simply shun her. So in the process of going to the doctor's office, she turns around, ends up in the supermarket, and then people are looking at her. First, they were looking at the infant on the supermarket cart, and then they were looking at her, and she went to the bathroom, and there was something coming out of her eye. And it wasn't a sty. It was some type of an object that she could not define. So we have here a very interesting mix that began for me as an infestation. I had a consultant, and I commend her. Her name is Michelle Budke. She's a medium that works out of Kansas. I also consulted an exorcist, Kenneth Torres, who is with the Warren Legacy Foundation, because I was very puzzled. Yes.
Yeah.
I was just floored. I was very puzzled with what I was actually dealing with, because we have the trappings of both. We have both something that's an advanced infestation, but we also have what appears to be where she's being marked.
Just want to interject. We're talking with Anna Maria Manilow. Her newest book, The Night Visitants, A Ufologist, An Experiencer, and Undefinable. We're talking about this incredible situation. You had to have been like, where did this come from? I mean, this is not what you signed up for, I would think, in a sense, right? That this is like this is not what you expected to hear, I would assume.
It was not. I was not surprised by it, because I used to be a MUFON investigator salad days. So I kind of knew what it should appear as, but and Tom reassured me she was an abductee. But also in the back of his mind, he also sensed a lot of different things that were going on that were not just your garden variety experiencer. Mm-hmm. This was something that was happening where there's contamination. And when I say that, I'll give you a for instance. In one part of the book, I shared a narrative where she is now engaged and they are driving in a car. The fiance is behind the wheel. They had just come back from a bar. It was towards nightfall, and he was taking her to her parents' house. The village that they live in, and I will call it a village because it's only about 5,000 people, is bordered by woods. And as they were driving down, they had to go through a wooded area in order to get to the parents' house. As soon as they left the town limits, something was pulling down the vehicle. He was driving, the engine started revving, and there was a weight, a tremendous weight, that seemed to be in the back hood, the luggage compartment of the car. And I don't mean inside. It was right on top of the car.
Yeah.
She was going to turn around, and the fiancé said, please, whatever you do, please don't do that. Just keep looking forward. And he reached over, he rolled up her window. You know, back in the day, this is in the 50s, rolled up her window, locked the door. He did the same with his. And he kept pressing down on the gas pedal. Whatever it was holding on. And she started yelling, I don't want whatever this is, because she could see the fear in his face, to be taken to my parents' home.
Yeah.
So he swung the car around. The wheels started screeching. They went back to the bar. And as soon as they hit the town limits, it went off or left off. Now, I know the audience is probably going to say this sounds like Bigfoot to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where there are some similarities here. They get out, they tell their friends what's going on. One guy volunteers to ride along with them, but he says, no, I'll brave it. We'll be fine. It left, you know, it's now off the car. They turn around, and once again, once they get into that section of woods, it hops back on. This time it's scratching the roof trying to get in. They're going down the road. They finally get to the parents' house. He swings the car over to enter the driveway. And at this point, he says to her, look at me. Don't look out your passenger window. And she said, where is it? It's right there at your passenger window. Do not look at it. So she turns to him. She's holding him. The next thing she knows, he's strangulating her.
Wow.
So that's what I mean by contamination. It, for lack of a better word, she starts to faint. She's wrestling with him. She's fighting with him. In the process, the parents are rushing out because they heard the car screech. Whatever it was leaves. They open the door, and he falls out of the door. He's unconscious. They're wondering what it is. They see scratch marks on the roof. Yes, people, it might be Bigfoot. They got claw marks, you know, took the paint off the back, the whole thing. 2 weeks later, they're driving in a different car. They're headed in a different direction. This time they're passing a barn. And once again, of course, it's twilight. Her fiance's talking to her. He's turning to her. She looks at him, and past him, they pass a barn. And there's something standing next to the barn. What it was appeared to be what she explained to me as being reptilian. It had the head of a lizard, but then it had some kind of a belt, and it had lobster claws for hands that went past its knees.
So super long arms, or the claws are super long.
And I can't tell you what it is. I she seems to think, she put two and two, she felt that that must have been the creature that was trying to get in the car. She was very reluctant to tell him. She was afraid it would once again influence him.
Because whatever it was that first time had, presumably whatever caused him to strangle her was being taken over by whatever was outside the car. I mean, I don't think that's not definitive though, is it? Or is that pretty much what everyone thinks?
I don't know. I don't.
I mean,
a lot
it,
of
right? It could be up more than one thing, right?
Yeah. And a lot of this book I leave to the reader to make their own decision, make their own conclusion, because it is just highly strange to me.
And, you know, I just have to say yes to reptoids, because that is something I've always, I'm always about reptoids. I've always been curious about that. But the other part of it is, like, you are truly running the gambit on every sort of possible entity, whether it's paranormal, borderline, or possibly demonic, possibly aliens, possibly cryptoid. I mean, and you know, the one thing that I have thought to myself and others that I've investigated with over the past not long, like 2 months, is that the veil where they all exist is so thin and they're all together that it's, to me, it's not impossible that it's like they're not they're not in their own separate categories, that they are actually, whether they're working together or just existing together, that they are all together. It's the same sort of energy.
And I agree with that, because after I started writing this book, I began to realize that we were really crossing the firmament into something. We have no idea how they're placed. We can't really put them in a box. So, you know, when I see camps of people, you know, the people who are Ghostbusters or ghost investigators versus the people who are ufologists, I always say to myself, somewhere along the line, it's not going to be cut out that neatly. And this book, certainly to me, with these two people, it is not cut out neatly at all. Even in Tom's case, it was not that neat. It was not disparate from any other phenomena. They were all meshed together.
It's really interesting. And I'm maybe putting two and two together to equal five. But, you know, the idea of, say, it's all started, like you said, with this Luger, which was an instrument of hate. Who knows what it had on it? And just let alone, you know, just all sorts of ideas of what the Nazis did, you know, when their beliefs of the occult and anything else that goes along with it. And then it just, can this one Luger be a magnet for all sorts of creatures and all sorts of entities to come in and kind of hone in on one person or hone in on the people who have that that energy around them then?
I think that Shailene was a very sensitive and vulnerable person. For something like this that had very strong negative energy to be introduced into the emotional and spiritual field of a child, I think it was enough to influence her. And I always think of entities as, if you have one, you probably will have more, because they are like leeches. And they feed off the energy of people. They expose their vulnerabilities and toy with them. And this, I believe, is one of those cases. And with the introduction of a negative entity, you then have the possibility of people who are not really, I don't see them as being a religious family, number one.
Yeah.
They probably had no idea where the family conflict was coming from, why they were feeling isolated. She felt very isolated from her parents. She felt very protective of her brother and sister. How much the sister knew, to this day, I don't know. But I know the brother is very aware of what happened to them, because he was old enough when it started happening. Ghosts. Yeah, go ahead.
Anna, let's just do this. Let's take another break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. A couple questions in the chat that we're going to get to in comments, and we're just going to continue talking about this book. I'll tell you, when we started to where we are at now is very different than what I expected, and I think that's what makes this so, so interesting. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Anna Maria Manolo and talk about the Night Visitants. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. Make sure to join us tomorrow as we finish off the week. We're going to have a friend of ours, guest Sam Beltrusis. He's going to be on tomorrow. He's going to be talking about his new book, Fueled by Fear, Lessons Learned While Chasing Ghosts. You know, Sam is always great to have on. We've had him on before. We talked about a lot of things in that episode, and I think that we're going to be doing that again tomorrow night. So please make sure that you are joining us tomorrow to talk about that. But we are continuing our conversation in our last segment here, talking about the Night Visitants, a ufologist, an experiencer, and the undefinable. And Anna, where do people get their, where would you like people to get their books from to order? Because I do have on my page, and it's really interesting. On my ghostboxradio.com page, I do a page called the Ghostbox Book Club, and on it I put all the books of authors that we have on the show. So if you kind of forget where you can get a book from, I have them all in one place. And I have for your book the Amazon link. Is that good, or do you have another place you'd like us to send people to?
Oh, that or my website is fine. My website is AnnaMariaManaloAuthor.com. And you know, all the books are going to be, well, they are already over there. And then including my sixth book, it should be in there by October. But they can read the description off of the website or off on Amazon, either one. They're also on Goodreads if people, you know, are more comfortable with Goodreads.
I'm gonna update that link then, so to make sure that people are going to your site, or at least as an option, because I assume that it's better for you financially if it goes through you opposed to Amazon.
Actually, no, it's just a direct link to Amazon. All it is it has my blog. It has my blog in it, so there's also additional stories that I periodically put in. I put my About Me page on there so people know where I came from, what kind of experiences I had that led me to this. But other than that, it's really just a summary of what the book is about. And then there's a button where it just takes them directly to Amazon.
Take them there. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So folks, you know, this, I think it's worth your time. This is such an interesting story. Please go and buy the book. And we're just going over to some questions here. And Linda, it kind of, I don't know if this veers away or if this fits right in with the conversation, because the conversation kind of seems to have a lot of different facets to it, obviously. And Linda just asked the question, have you entertained the idea that all these creatures have souls? And we, you know, honestly, I don't think a lot of us really talk about that aspect too terribly much about, you know, in my mind, when we especially talking about aliens or even like, say, a reptoid of some kind, a reptile person, you know, to be honest, the first thing in my mind is not whether or not they have a soul, but that is a very interesting a conversation, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When you look at anything that interacts with you, anything that has any kind of consciousness, the first thing I think of is that, yes, they have spirit, they have souls. You know, obviously, in this case, the ones that are interacting with Tom are positive souls. He calls them guardians. He calls them American Indian. You know, they're wise. They share with him how they feel. They interact with him in such a way that he doesn't feel threatened. Of course, you know, that coming in the middle of the night or during a meditation could be very disarming. But overall, these are spirits from the past. In the case of Shailene, whatever these entities are, they are negative in origin, just because you could tell from what they're doing to her and her family. So yeah, anything I believe that has consciousness does have a soul.
And, you know, one thing that kind of came to my mind when you were talking about your original conversation or your constant conversation with Shailene is the fact that you being a very professional interviewer, that you've done so much for it, you could tell someone is not telling the truth very easily, I would assume.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to discern in person than it is over the phone, but with repeat questions, when I probe, when I get clarification, I try to see if there's consistency and how quickly they reply. With Shailene, I sensed a lot of sincerity. What I got there in the first few interviews I had with her, I sensed was someone who was just basically like, dying to share all this information that she had been keeping in. It was almost a very cathartic experience for her. And she told me that at the close of the book, when she finally read the book, when I sent it to her, that she felt a cleansing, that somehow now she can share with people what she actually went through. She had difficulty explaining what was going on with her to her children. And she has grandchildren now who, you know, are still unaware of what is going on, except for some things they've witnessed. But the children overall now didn't have to be talked to. All she did was hand them the book and they read it and then they talked about it. So in that sense, I feel like I've served a purpose in helping her to put closure on the events that have transpired since she was 6 years old.
It's interesting how you say that. And what comes to mind is another comment that Linda put out there. I think this is good for like the greater readership as well. It's, you know, when we're talking about the energies and all these different, what we would normally categorize separately, but now we're kind of like, well, how do we define this? Are there boundaries or are there not boundaries? You know, Linda says, it sounds like that, Anna, your book is a good start or support for conversation, like being able to kind of like kind of how you're saying it too. It's like, this is what it is. You're not drawing conclusions. It's not a thesis paper. You're not coming up and saying, and because of what we heard, that must mean this, this, and this. You're allowing us, the readers, to absorb it and then do what we want to with it.
Yeah, and one of the things I did with this book is a lot of people ask me, usually when you write nonfiction, you put a conclusion. And I am so against that. Because I think that if I make a conclusion, it's through the lens of my own personal experience. People have differing opinions on this particular book. Some, if they've been in ufology, have a totally different interpretation. As a matter of fact, in the past, in the beginning, after the release of the book, Tom and I would come together on a show, and this is too late for Tom. That's the reason why he's not here.
Too late
for
me.
But he would explain it in a way a ufologist would explain it, and I would explain it in such a way that it's from the angle of a paranormal investigator. And some of it is only because of my own personal experiences, not because I was an investigator for the paranormal per se. I was actually a UFO investigator at one time.
Yeah.
But the trappings of the beginnings of this particular situation, all the different encounters, sounded very much to me like an infestation. But if you go further into the book, it drastically changes.
So it's almost like it sounds like a chameleon in a sense. It just keeps changing its colors, if you will.
And as it becomes worse, as it magnifies and becomes even deeper, that's what happens. You're going to see both the infestation in action, but you're also going to see the other end of it, where it's a definite, call it a C5, C4.
Wow.
Because sometimes she's not in the room.
I mean, how do people not want to read this book? I mean, honestly, this is just so fascinating because you immediately is like, what happens with her? What happens to her? And, you know, without giving away anything, because I don't want to have you give away anything, but it sounds like that things are still ongoing.
Yes. So into the very final interview, one of the things Shailene told me was that it was still going on. I then offered for her to get some help because I knew she was feeling isolated. Mm-hmm. The area where she lives is, I would say, remote. I kind of wondered and worried for her safety. So I offered to reach out to people that I knew to connect with her, refer her to people who actually will be able to investigate and provide a solution. She at the time refused. She didn't want to be identified because, you know, I also mentioned that maybe podcasts would want to be talking to her as well. So mm-hmm. that is not on the plate at this time. She also refused any kind of intervention because she was concerned about how the neighborhood was going to react. It's a very small insular community, let's put it that way.
Sure.
And then I closed it by contacting Tom. And what Tom told me was that things worsened when she started sending pictures to him. evidence. He was personally affected by the photographs. He was very worried, very concerned. His life practically stopped because of it. He started having health concerns. So what we have here is something that just became magnified to the point where we can actually see events happening almost on a daily basis, almost on a nightly basis to her. And what he shared with me was that she had not told me everything.
Oh, wow.
So there's definitely more, and it is ongoing. He is in touch with the experiencer.
Touch with her. You know, it's interesting because I, you know, and maybe I'm once again being conspiratorial here, but the idea of not wanting the help, refusing the help, I understand the podcast part of it. I understand the reasoning for the help, but at the same time, that feels like a tactic of withdrawal, you know, mm-hmm. you know, that when you're talking about the infestation, the oppression, you know, that those are tactics that, you know, get somebody out of the public, out of like from, you know, working with other people or interacting with other people. And, you know, it fills me with fear for her because it feels like that it's almost working overdrive on her right now.
You're pretty on the spot with that one, Greg, because mm-hmm. that was the feeling that I had. I had one particular event, which I will never forget as I was writing this book. I'm a Roman Catholic by birth. And to this day, I now practice it because of this book. There was an incident where I was sleeping. And the interesting part about it is I was the only one affected. My husband was right next to me. It was the dead of night. I was coming up at a chapter where there was a severe event that was happening to her. And part of the event had to do with chains, a creature that was in chains. Mm-hmm. And Tom Conwell encountered something in his bedroom that was dragging chains in the middle of the night. I ended up having the same, if you want to call it a nightmare, I don't know what it was. It was very real to me, but I couldn't move. I couldn't open my eyes, and our bedroom is fully carpeted, so you would not hear any type of person dragging chains from the corner of the room towards me. That was not possible, but it was very distinct.
I mean, folks, check out this book. I mean, I don't even know what to ask the right question here because you're being affected. We have about a minute left. I mean, this is one of the only interviews I've done talking about a book and stuff where I'm feeling very frightened by what I'm hearing. You know, I don't feel like anything for me or anything, but just the incidents and stuff. This is not normal, and this is not what I expected this book to be about.
It wasn't the book I expected to write about.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, wow. and so, I mean, where do you think that there's going to be a follow-up to this then at some point? Do you foresee that? Or do you think that this is just kind of like, well, the majority of us will maybe never know any more than what's in the book?
I think at this point, it's up to Tom whether he wants to continue with what is happening to him. You know, I'm certainly happy to write another part to the book to follow through on what has happened since I last put the pen down. That's a possibility.
So once again, folks, the book is called Night Visitants, a UFOlogist, an Experiencer, and the Undefinable. Anna, thank you so very much for joining us tonight. This is incredible.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. We'll have you back on again. We'll be back on tomorrow. We're going to have Sam Beltrusis. We're going to talk about Fueled by Fear. Everyone, buy Anna's book. Thank you very much, and we'll see you tomorrow.